The views and opinions expressed by guests on the TWBC podcast are solely those of the guest and do not necessarily reflect the views of nor constitute an endorsement by the host, TWBC, or the advertisers.
National championships, Confederation championships, World championships, major professional events. For over three decades, he has been there for many of the sport's greatest moments. And now he brings you even closer to the movers and shakers in the world of high echelon tournament water skiing. From the founder and creator of the Water Ski Broadcasting Company comes the TWBC Podcast. And now here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings, salutations, and a welcome to all to this latest edition of the TWBC podcast. I am the aforementioned Tony Lightfoot, and in this episode, or one of the first episodes of the new year that is 2022, I bring on a very special guest, a longtime competitor, pretty much a super fan of the sport of tournament water skiing, and the head honcho of the Ball of Spray website, which continues to like break records left, right, and center for a water ski centric website. His name is John Horton. How are you doing today, sir?
Doing good, Tony. Stoked to be on your podcast. Great way to start the year.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, I'm sure a lot of people will be eager to find out what your take is on certain issues and that kind of stuff. I mean you haven't shied away from offering up your opinions here, there, and everywhere. But we kind of start us off by starting at the beginning. So, how did John Horton get into this funny old game that is tournament water skiing?
I didn't really have a choice. I was born into it. My dad built the world's first tournament ski lake back in 1968. And I mean, honestly, if he hadn't done it, somebody else would have. But he'd kind of been thinking about the project for years. And then when he moved to California, there's so little water ski access in Los Angeles that he went out into the Mojave Desert and kind of to an impossible area. You'd look at it and think you wouldn't build water ski lakes there.
It's close enough to Death Valley, isn't it?
Well, no, not exactly. It's, if you draw a line between Los Angeles and Vegas, Newberry Springs is there. Death Valley is... Death Valley's not that close. I confess I've never been to Death Valley. It's not right around the corner, but the Mojave Desert is hot and dry, and you wouldn't think there was water there. And actually, as of 2022, there's not enough water there that you would build a new ski lake. But in 1968, the water table was high and water was cheap. And so the year I was born, water went in the lake. And so kind of just quick other notes about my dad. He was USA Water Ski Board of Directors. He was the team doctor for the US World Team a number of times. So the short version of that is I grew up in a water ski family. I think we've got four generations at this point who have competed at nationals. So born into it. Didn't really have a choice.
All right, then. You mentioned stuff being cheap in 1968. Now you now continue to live in California. Nothing is cheap there now, huh?
No. And you know, my wife and I don't want to announce something, but we're always talking about trying to get out of here. So believe me, if I could escape the People's Republic of California, I would. But that's a subject for a different show, I think.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, but everyone that I know within the sport knows that John Horton has an association, has a tie-in with the Golden State of California. But obviously, that's politics for a whole nother time. You know, even though, having said that, you know, the politics that goes there with gasoline prices and all that kind of stuff, you know, because without gasoline, we wouldn't have a sport, you know, that kind of deal, you know. So, we could mention a lot about that until the cows come home. So you're involved
Tony, I actually want to challenge that. I read people, I don't want to challenge you on that, but let me just make a statement that drives me insane. I read on a regular basis on my forum people talking about the price of gas, which is painful and it is real. But when you own a $100,000 boat, and you've got a $2,000 ski, and the average ski ride is about 1.2 gallons, and the price of gas goes up by a dollar, and your focus is, holy crap, my ski ride cost me $1.10 more than it did last year. I kind of think you're focusing on the wrong stuff.
You've got a very good point there. I mean, obviously, with the amount that goes on boats and skis and all that kind of equipment, competition entry fees, insurance, for crying out loud. I mean,
Exactly,
it's
exactly.
you know, I mean, it's I mean, it's just a tip of a very, very large iceberg. But do you? I mean, but with everything else, that runs on a gas engine, seeming to be perceived as evil in the Goldwood state of California. Do you kind of get a little bit of the sense that maybe the sport, because it runs on gasoline, is under the crosshairs a little bit from those who, I would hasten to add, would be, I don't know, quote unquote, tree huggers type deal, you know, in terms of being legislated off the water type deal.
No, I don't experience that. I mean, California has its own unique problems, since I guess we're going to go there, is so it is literally lack of access. I forget how, let's say Los Angeles County is in excess of 20 million people. Well, there is no ski club currently that you can join within 2 hours of Los Angeles where you can show up with your boat. Well, actually, I mean, that's not true. There's one that's not. There's one place where you could possibly show up with your boat and put it in the water and ski. So the reason why I own the house I'm sitting in now on a ski lake is because I had to buy my own house on a ski lake to have my own access. It's the only way I could ski without bumming rides off friends. So south of Sacramento, access to the sport, I mean, you look at it's the most populous, most wealthy state in the union. Access to water skiing below Sacramento is astronomically difficult. And so, when
Until you
we talk
get
about, go
to
ahead.
San Diego and Imperial and those places and El Centro type
Well,
deal.
no, not true either. Because you go to San Diego, and yes, you can go ski in the bay. That's true. There's a little bit of saltwater skiing, but that access is, I don't think it's used a whole bunch. But then if you go to El Centro, again, you're going to fork out 400 grand or 500 grand for a house at Imperial to ski. There's no ski club there. It's not like you're in West Palm and you can pay whatever $15 a year for your membership at Ocoheli and go ski. The problems of skiing in the Golden State are massive. Now you move up to Sacramento and the amount of skiing and access is fantastic. Actually, if I could convince my wife to move to Sacramento, and not an option for other reasons, but Sacramento is, if people are looking for a place to be a water skier, to go and have access without spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, it is a fantastic option.
Yeah, and I mean, if you pull up Google Earth or anything like that, and you like go a little bit to the left towards Bakersfield and that kind of stuff, you got rows upon rows of lakes. But I mean, have they had trouble keeping water in those lakes and keeping them to where they're actually skiable?
No. All these lakes are here, but again, there is no public access. If you haven't purchased your own lot, you can't put your boat in the water. So that's my point is, if you live in Los Angeles and you want to come ski at Bakersfield, where I am now, you're going to have to shell out at least 200 grand for a place, and then you're going to, and then you've got HOA dues and whatever else. It is a problem for somebody who is looking to come into the sport. I know we're squirreling way off into left field on this, but it's something I'm passionate about, that it is so difficult to live in this state and be involved in the sport.
I mean, because I'd just spoken to a friend of mine who, I mean, I mean, has access, continues to have access, and actually brings his friends along to give them an opportunity to try the sport of water skiing, whether it be two skis behind a boat, whether getting up on one or that type of stuff. I mean, that's considerably easier for him, considering that he lives in Tennessee type deal. So yeah, I mean that's a drastic difference, trying to get people into the sport. I mean, from what you're telling me, is demonstratively more difficult in the Golden State than it is in the Volunteer State or places like Florida, right?
I would imagine so. I mean, again, in Sacramento, you can just show up at Bell Aqua or Liquid Zone or Valenson or all these places, and for a reasonable amount of money, you can just show up and buy a ride with current boats and great drivers and that. Below Sacramento, it just doesn't exist.
All right then. So, let's move on a little bit from access to the sport, because if anyone Googled the sport of tournament water skiing, eventually there were well, I wouldn't say eventually, because one of the sites that pops up on a Google search is Ball of Spray, and you've been the main architect of that website since its inception. So let's go to the beginning. How long have you been involved with Ball of Spray, and I mean, what was the genesis? I mean, what gave you the epiphany to say, hey, listen, there ain't enough water skiing online, and let's put this up on there.
So the site as it exists today, I believe is about mid-December 2009. But before that, what had happened is I'd been away from the sport for about 7 years. After college, I kind of went off and was living in LA and wasn't skiing much. And then when I moved to Bakersfield and started skiing again, I'd gone online and I was trying to go down the rabbit hole of learning more technical stuff about slalom. I was looking for people who knew as much more than I did as I could find, right? I was desperate for why do we do this thing? Why is this stuff important? How does this make my skiing better? And I pretty much didn't find anything. I'd wandered over to Ski Fly, and this time it wasn't incredibly toxic over there, but I asked some questions and kind of got crickets. And I don't know that my questions were good or compelling, but I was frustrated that I was looking for information, couldn't find it.
So
So I went off. Go ahead.
basically it was an effort to try and get more than what was out there in terms of commenting and trying to help you out with questions that you had about your own skin and trying to improve from a technical aspect.
100%. It was a search for knowledge. So I started a little forum that wasn't even called Ball Spray at the time. And the original guys, I got to give shout out to like Ward McLean and Bruce Butterfield and Dwight Woodbridge, a couple of guys that have been there since the very beginning. And we had this little forum and it did its thing. And then I started doing carbon fins. I don't know if you remember that. I was making fins out of carbon fiber, and
Yes, I still have
with
one, and I still have the calipers for it.
excellent. And I think with the skis of that era, I think that technology was really valid. And I think when skis got better, I think when materials changed in the ski world, those fins aren't as valid anymore. And so we've kind of went away from them. But the point is I built myself some notoriety. And I could not have built Ball of Spray if I hadn't built carbon fins first, because people got excited about the fins. My name got re-exposed to the sport, even though I'd been, skied nationals since I was a little kid and all. So eventually I went and thought, well, I'm going to make like a more of a real site out of this thing. And when I built the real site, it just kind of took off, and traffic has more or less grown every year up to a peak of like 8 million page views a year since then.
Wow, I mean 8 million page views. I mean that is tremendous growth from what you experienced from you started in 2009, did you say, or was it earlier?
Well, 2000, 2009 is the site as it exists today. There was a couple of years with a little forum. I don't even know what it was called anymore.
So starting from a relatively small forum, you now have a site that the majority of people that go to the website itself. I mean there are a number of things that you can go to. Almost everyone seems to, go towards the forum to hear like what the scuttlebutt is, what everyone is talking about. And it seems to have grown in leaps and bounds, not only in terms of page views and stuff like that, but also to a certain extent a little bit of notoriety here and there as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's, if I had it my way, if I could shape the world, the forum would be 99% skiers talking about the boring nitty-gritty of slalom skiing. But the reality is it's the outrage of the day, right? I mean, what's top of mind with people is what gets discussed.
You're kind of like the Drudge Report of water skiing, it would seem.
Yeah, I don't know if I want that title, but sure. It's administrating it is challenging. As we're in a politically charged environment in this country and internationally, people are passionate about stuff. It's been a real challenge to run a website that is almost exclusively about water skiing, pretty much anything about water skiing, but not letting the outrage of the greater political arena come in. And yeah,
Yeah,
so there's that.
there's that to take into consideration, because I mean moderating a forum of that kind of nature, where people have opinions one way or the other, you've got to you I mean I'm sure you've got to actually take on the mole the literally the role of moderator to make sure that it doesn't become so toxic that it discourages from people from ever visiting or ever offering their opinions ever again. Is that correct?
It is paramount to me that it not become toxic. It has to be constructive. Or it, not only will it drive traffic away, but I will cease to care if it's toxic. I'm not interested in that toxic environment. And some of the big discussions, I confess, I don't read them. I make sure that people are not insulting each other, or they're not, at some point people are just passionate about stuff and I let it run. But as long as the conversation mimics the tone that you might find in a professional environment, I'll let it go.
Excellent. That's something I'm going to work back to, because I mean, in this day and age, back in the day when online discussions and online conversations were like were basically email driven, and you went to a certain chat room or something like that. Most of the discussions were quite civil, because actually in that point of time, people were mostly well educated enough to actually put something out there that looked akin to a letter, with all the right grammar and everything going on. But this day and age, you a lot of people that haven't had that experience or have never wanted that experience to start off with will just like fire off something and to and ju just just to enrage someone into a response that is quite frankly very, very, disconcerting to me.
Yeah, there's no question. And there's especially in an affinity forum, or in a web forum that's specific to a sport, even with the best intentions, there is an inverse relationship between many people's knowledge versus I'm screwing this up. Enthusiasm to knowledge ratio, right? There will be, sometimes the people with the least knowledge are the most enthusiastic, and the people with the most knowledge are the least apt to interact. And parallel to that, you've got the famous Dunning-Kruger effect. If you're not aware of the Dunning-Kruger effect, you should Google it. It's quite humorous. It's the relationship of somebody's knowledge versus their confidence. And again, people with very little knowledge tend to have the greatest confidence. So you get these conversations that are a little lopsided.
Okay, I've just pulled up that that expression on Google, as a matter of fact.
It's pretty funny.
Kruger effect in psychology, a cognitive bias whereby people with limited knowledge or competence in a given intellectual or social media or social domain greatly overestimate their knowledge or competence that the domain relative to the object criteria or to the performance of their peers. Or of people in general. So basically, the people with the least education, the least amount of knowledge or least amount of confidence about that knowledge are the ones that tend to comment the most and try and cause an absolute storm.
Right. And so here's the challenge is my forget about keeping my advertisers happy, forget about anything else. I want the website to be a resource to the re to the to the world, not just the readership, but to the world. Like if somebody is trying to figure out whatever question about skiing, I mean, should they switch from double boots to a kicker? I want them to be able to come to the website and search around and dig and find good information. Whereas I think the I can't believe I'm just totally criticizing my readership. I'm just going to keep going for it.
That's fine.
My re yeah, great. But my readership is largely there for entertainment. And that's the conflict is I really want somebody who's new to the sport, to find good stuff. And sometimes that runs completely contrary to the entertainment of somebody that just wants to blather on with their opinion, which, with my years in the sport, I'm usually often confident that their comments are misplaced. So I don't know. Obviously, I've thought about website administration or form administration quite a bit.
Okay, so and so to, so going on from there a little bit, and I've got some questions to ask about probably the most popular forum subject going on right now, which is run into 40 pages, but I'll put that aside for one moment to kind of ask you in from this perspective, and I'll probably come in a little bit of a criticism for this
That's all right.
myself, but here goes. Do you believe wholeheartedly that that effective journalism exists within the sport of tournament water skiing?
No.
No.
No,
Okay.
I think there's little pockets. I think you do a good job, and I think that Trent and I's distance from center shows, which don't come out as often as they should. I think we're pretty objective and honest, but generally speaking, I don't think there's much of it, right? I mean, I think that when you Waterski broadcast, when you give your opinion, I don't think anybody questions the sincerity and honesty of what comes out of your mouth, and I hope people feel the same way about Trent and I, but there's not very much. And you use the word journalism. There's so little journalism. Again, it's you and me and Trent and a handful of other people. I don't know how people consume news in the sport.
Because
It's
most of the stuff that's published on like the national governing body website or that kind of stuff, you know, on if you w go a little bit further, most of it is just like press releases or that type of stuff, and
right.
maybe
Yep.
video press releases. But for my part, I don't seem to have. I don't, you know. It's not like the NFL or MLB or MLS or any of the major pro sports that many within our sport are trying to equate to and trying to close the gap between, you know, in terms of popularity. You know, there just seems to be a complete dearth of journalism of reportage that could really potentially grow the sport if it's if it's effectively curated type deal.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not sure I follow you on how journalism in the sport would grow the sport. Growing the sport is, again, there's a 4-hour show in that argument. I'm not, and I don't have solutions. It's just difficult. We're just a tiny sport. I mean, even from the governing bodies, for them to put out news, unfortunately, the governing bodies pay their salary employees on sponsorship dollars. I pay myself on sponsorship dollars. The Water Ski Broadcast Company pays itself on sponsorship dollars. And I'm not saying that you've sold out and that people should question your opinions, because I'm pretty sure you've never held an opinion back. But we're a tiny sport. It's really hard for, for there to be an existence of unbiased news.
Yeah, but what the point that I'm making is that as the sport starts to get a little bit more traction through TWBC and through better exposure through your website and a lot of other people of some people at least have tried to extol the virtues of water skiing, there just seems to be a lack of like. Of like a report that says like so and so skier, skied for the title, but had something to say afterwards, and then someone come, and then the person to whom he or she is referring to comes back with their comments, and then they put like a little byline and say that's a news report, as you would typically find on like ESPN.com or something like that, you know.
Yeah, I just think the ecosystem is too small. I mean, the famous example of kind of where you're going is you go back to 2 worlds ago when Jarrett spoke to the webcaster and he totally ripped the event organizer a new sphincter. And yeah, that if we were Formula One or NFL, there would have been a news cycle and multiple people would have written about it. I don't know that ecosystem exists. Am
Elise,
I missing your point?
no, absolutely, absolutely, and I mean, I'm just trying to explore the deal with that and the rationale behind there not having enough journalism and yes, you rightly say. I mean, there isn't a big enough ecosystem. I mean, we're trying our best to actually get to that point, and that is why we put on the webcast and all that kind of stuff going on. So yeah, so.
But
Going a lot.
to close this, your group and my group are doing the best we can, and I think that the public would consume a little more if somebody wants to tell us how we could create more noise. I think both you and I would listen. I don't know how we get there.
Yeah, and it's how to create that noise, because I mean we're putting our staff out there. I mean it's on the most widely used video streaming service out there. It's there for a reason, not because it's cheap or anything like that, but I mean when people type in World Water Ski Championship, boom, it comes up as on the YouTube page with all of the stuff. That's the primary reason why we use that service instead of our own streaming mechanism. But let's continue on a little bit as well, and this actually goes into the realm of calling out maybe the national governing body and national organizations around the world. And I know John is probably salivating all of this, or maybe the opposite. But currently, the top stream, the top thread going on right now is a lot of stuff going on with USA Water Ski and Wake Sports and how it's mandating its membership to have to go through Safe Sport and a whole other bunch of bureaucratic hoops just to be able to continue on with the sport that they've involved themselves and they love, and this has gone over 40 pages so far. So a lot of heated discussion going on. Your take on that?
I have about six takes on it.
Oh, wow.
To the to the membership, I feel the same way about, and this is my comment to the membership, I have the same feeling about the safe sport mandates as I do about the price of gas, right? Price of gas has gone up. Your ski ride just got a dollar more expensive. The safe sport mandate is an inconvenience. I'm not sure I believe in its effectiveness or value, but in all honesty, it's like $40 an hour of your time. If the people who were complaining on my website had invested half as much time in just sitting down in front of the computer and taking care of it, instead of complaining about it, the problem would be solved.
It's like COVID right now. I mean, you can comment all you want about the efficacy of the vaccine or the absolute need to actually take it based upon your work environment or what have you. But if you just go out there and take the vaccine and, swallow a bit of your pride and get it done, then you can move on with your life,
Well, I disagree with you on that, but that's a different show.
Hit me with it. Come on.
No, the vaccine thing. That's fine. Let's not go there.
But do you see the parallels between the two a little
Well,
bit?
yes. No. I think actually, yes. Yeah, I think that's wise. But so let's talk about the whole safe sport mandate is parallel to things that have nothing to do with water skiing. In fact, it's largely not about water skiing. It is the litigious society that we live in, right? It is so USA Water Ski, I don't think USA Water Ski particularly has a choice. And that is something that I think is missed on so many people that are complaining.
It's a USO
Is
USOPC mandate, isn't it?
yes. And I love the conversation. I mean, we can go down this rabbit hole of the mistake that AWSA made back in the 70s when they formed USA Water Ski because they believed that we were going to be in the Olympics. I mean, you go back to one of my notes in front of me, but was it 68 or 72 that Ricky McCormick, or what year was
Munich
Munich
was
Olympics?
72. Munich was
Okay,
72.
so.
Montreal was 76. Moscow, the 80s.
Right. So, Ricky went to the Olympics and won the gold medal and then came back and was on, I believe, the Dick Cavett show, which came before the Tonight Show, right? It was back in the day, and he was on there with the Rolling Stones and the Muppets. You can check me on that. And I
Yeah,
mean, water skiing,
And
yeah,
just and just to
what
just to give you an indi and just to interrupt you there for a moment, the Dick Cavett show. I mean, for the, if you've ever seen Forrest Gump, it's the scene where John Lennon was seated down next to Forrest Gump. That's Dick Cavett. But carry on.
So the point is, I mean, we in water skiing, we were the original extreme sport. So people like my father, this is one of the great mistakes of his life. He firmly believed, and the people on the board of directors with him, that we were going to become an Olympic sport. So we had to jump through these hoops. We had to create USA Water Ski to become this umbrella organization. So we gave up a lot of our autonomy because at the time we were this. We were a single sport, slalom, trick, jump. That was our whole thing. But the belief that we were going to go to the Olympics made us join with show ski racing, and then eventually wakeboard and kneeboard, Lord help me, and disabled, which I do actually support, and collegiate. But we formed this greater thing so we would fit the template that allowed us to be part of the Olympic movement. Because we believe that. So I think that we the wheels came off the train then that led us to today, where we have to meet the same criteria as all the other sports, which are in, subordinate to the Olympic movement.
Yeah, I think a lot of people back in the 70s were probably giddy with the whole notion of actually being into the sport. But in my mind, there was probably one thing back in those days that wouldn't that that they that would have been in place that would have would never allow water skiing back would never allow skiing into the Olympic Games, and that's the fact that back in the 1970s, they still have a prohibition against professional athletes, and there were some professional athletes in the 1970s that were making money from the sport, but basically in the Olympic Charter, and this was supported by a guy named Avery Brundage, you know, he basically said, no professional athletes in the games, zilch, nada, nix, you know, and I mean, you had people like Jim Thorpe, who had to give up their medals in early Olympic games because he made a little bit of money through baseball and that kind of stuff. And it was only around about 1984 when you had the Olympic mm-hmm. Games in Los Angeles, and a little bit afterwards that pro athletes, who were people who actually made just a smidgen of a living from what they're doing in sports, were at least given a shot of being in the Olympic Games.
Yeah, and I don't think pro skiing sort of exists at that point. I don't think that was the barrier. I think the original sin in my mind is this belief that we were going to become part of the Olympics, we were going to be on TV, and suddenly the sport was going to increase by 10 or 100 fold in membership and become, you know, a legitimate giant sport like snow skiing. And I can understand where those guys had, how that idea came to be, but it was completely misplaced. And I don't, you know, you get out your time machine, you go back to 1975. Was it obvious it was a bad idea at the time? I don't know. I don't have the foggiest. But looking back, 2020, I think that, you know, you can draw a straight line from safe sport in 2022 to the creation of USA Water Ski back in the 70s, and, you know, losing our autonomy and putting ourselves underneath the Olympic movement.
Okay. Let's continue on and just try and put some bit of fairness into the deal. You know, I mean obviously there's a lot of ways that USA Water Ski and AWSA has kind of shot themselves a little bit in the foot so far as trying to get more exposure to the sport and more membership, you know, because the membership numbers have dropped considerably, and they continue to drop to this day. Is there anything that you see within USA Water Ski and Wake Sports, as it's called now, and AWSA? Do you actually see anything that those guys have done within the last couple of seasons that has actually benefited the sport going forward?
Oh, I mean, of course. I mean, you look at Jeff Surday, I don't endorse every one of his ideas, but man, do I appreciate that he stuck his neck out and tried some crazy stuff. The fact that he brought, and these are little things, but the fact that he brought the equivalent of the U.S. Open and the America's Cup back to nationals, trying to make nationals more of an event that people aspire to get to. Because, I mean, if you think about the desire to train and practice and buy equipment and get involved, this path, this goal of making U.S. nationals, having the America's Cup there as an event, I think really inflates that. So yeah, I mean, there's, you know, stuff like that I think is fantastic. As far as regular benefits to the membership, I think there have been a lot of attempts to make membership interesting for somebody who's not a tournament skier, and I actually think that's all a boondoggle.
All right, yeah, because over the last few seasons, a lot of things have changed in the sport. I mean, now, in order to run a slalom event at the highest level, you've got to have shore path, you've got to have zero off, you've got to have a boat that's one of the approved boats that's been used for the past couple of seasons, or preferably that season type deal. So there seems to be one or two obstacles in the way of someone who is actually getting into the sport from actually going in and competing towards the highest level now. So do you feel that way as well, that there are just way too many obstacles in place for the sake of creating obstacles?
For the sake of creating obstacles, no. I mean, like you talk about zero off. I think the transition to zero off, I don't know that they could have done it better. Well, you go back to, I think it's 2008, the transition, it was the first year of zero off. I think that was terribly managed and it drove people out of the sport. But now we have zero off and everybody that's involved in the sport agrees it's fantastic. And your boat has to be older than 2008 and have that original engine in it for it not to have zero off in it. So, you know, that pain has diminished, right? And
Right,
it's
yeah.
it right. So, and I mean, you know, and people are now, some people are rubbing their hands together, worrying about the advent of boat path monitoring systems, SurePath, and the lesser known SkiPath, which by the way is also very good. And I don't get it. Why would you not want to go to a tournament and know that your driver had to be more straight? And if, you know, it's not, again, you own a $100,000 boat, probably if you have a current year boat, if you're taking your boat to tournaments, maybe it's a $60,000 boat. The cost of, if you're serious about your driving, the cost of one of these boat path monitoring systems, it's a chunk of change, but if you wanted an inexpensive sport, you'd be swimming. I mean,
Yeah.
it's just it's you know, I hate to be flippant about the way people spend money, but you just, you know, there's a reason why you don't find very many people in the sport that are first year out of college,
Yeah.
because you know you're either mid-career and you can afford the sport, or your parents are paying for it.
Absolutely.
So these I don't know about these impedances. Yeah, it's difficult. But are they necessary evils? I don't even know that they're evils at this point.
Yeah, the necessities rather than necessary evils, I guess. So I mean we've covered a lot of ground here, So I mean, you get to watch a lot of tournaments through us and other vendors within the sport. Obviously, the biggest tournament last year was the Worlds, where like the greatest performances. It was like the greatest show on surf. Did you see what I did there?
I did. I did.
Yeah, the greatest show on surf. Well, not quite on surf. It wake just doesn't, or spray or anything like that, just doesn't have the same appeal. I was trying to go for the old Mike Martz type deal, the greatest show on turf. But anyway, but I mean, I digress. The World Championships, some of the greatest performances ever produced, and leading up to the World Championships. The IWWF, at least in the tournament committee, made some changes that address some serious concerns in the sport. Do you think all of them have been addressed effectively, given what you saw with the World Championships?
I'm not s clear on what specifics you're talking about, Tony.
So far as opening up the entrance qualifications, rather than being part of a
Man.
team, or rather being like high echelon, like top 20, top 12 in the world in order to be able to ski, they
Well,
open that up.
yeah. You know, I know people that argued very firmly that that diminished the exclusivity and the specialness of Worlds. I don't know. I kind of see it from a business perspective, that the host site needs to make money. I'm sorry that's true, but it is. And I don't know what drove International to make that decision, but from my perspective, that allowed the Florida ski schools and especially Travers to generate revenue from practice, and it we want Worlds at sites like Travers. Travers is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't, you know, I know that having so many series, especially in men's slalom, did create some other controversies perhaps, but I don't know that I care that there was more skiers there. So if the tournament was tiny, is it more special? Yes. All the way out here on the West Coast, did I feel like it was less of a special event? No. Men's slalom at the 2021 Worlds was perhaps the greatest show ever in the history of the sport.
What's not to like about Dane Meckler going through 41 off?
Holy shit. Can I say shit on your podcast?
That's fine. I'm sure
It
that
was it was a jaw-dropping event. It was, you know, if you look at the memes of Joe Rogan when he's commentating at UFC, and I don't even really like that stuff, but he gets this fate look on his face where his eyes are popping out of his head. That was my face when Dane pulled that 41 out of his butt. It was just like what just happened? Did they forget to shorten the rope? No, they didn't. It was insane. That was a scream in the microphone moment right there.
Yeah, I mean that was a tremendous performance. I monitored that all the way throughout, you know. And you know, and I mean like slalom and jump are like the blue ribbon event so far as tournament water skiing is concerned, especially the World Championships. But and I think you mentioned this on the Distance Run Center broadcast that you have with Trent Finlayson. Big shout out to both of you for making that happen. But overall has made a bit of a resurgence, not only with the women's overall, because I mean you've got the likes of Anna Gay and Janina Bonneman that have come through, and Sasha Denyerskaya, and of course Anna Strelitzova is there. But I made a conscious decision going into the World Championships as the announcer to really stay on top of the men's overall competition, and it lived up to the billing, certainly.
Oh, it's just fantastic. Dorian and Poland. I don't, you know, I think we have eras where overall is interesting, and then eras where there's one standout skier and crushes it, and it's not very interesting. You know, you go back to my youth, and it was Sammy Carl Patrice, and it was a gunfight every Worlds.
Don't forget Mike Hazelwood.
Well, I think no, that's before Sammy Carl Patrice, and who I don't. Did Hazelwood ever win an overall?
Yes, he did. He won the overall back in 1977.
At is that in Toronto?
That was in Milano.
I was there. I'm a little bit too young to. I mean, I was a huge Hazelwood fan as a jumper, but I don't appreciate him as a as an overall skier. Although he did ski for Conley, and they are a major sponsor of Ball of Spray, so thank you, Conley.
There you go, fantastic plug those guys. But yeah, I mean Mike Hazelwood won the World Overall Championship in 1977, won the jump in seven in 79 and in 81, and was in contention for the overall World Championship in 1987, where he had that infamous battle against him and Sammy Duvall, that which escalated on the dockside, and I was actually there as a member of the crowd that watched on in horror, you know. So I mean, it's overall's back.
I miss it. Yeah, no, that's the point. I mean, Poland and Llewellyn are. I feel bad for the overall skiers because I don't think people realize that they are some of the most elite athletes in the world. You kind of wish these guys had gone to golf or tennis because they'd all be multimillionaires at this point, right?
And I mean,
They're
both of
so
them, both
talented.
of them are just freaks. Like Dorian can skate with the best of them ice hockey, and like I don't know what else Joel Poland can do physically in terms of sport. But I mean, he's an absolute freak on a trick ski and any other ski for that matter.
Yeah, no question, no question. We're lucky to have those guys in the sport for sure.
All right, then, as we continue to monitor the continuation of the sport with the great performances of Joel Poland and Dorian Llewellyn, is there anything that you would like to see move forward in the sport of tournament water skiing that hasn't seriously been addressed yet? I mean we've touched upon politics, we've touched upon performances. Is there anything within somewhere in between that you think needs to happen for the sport to truly enjoy better than average exposure?
Well, I don't know if this is where you're going, and I'm going to put the listeners to sleep with this,
Go.
but I think the trick points need to be completely rewritten.
To what extent, higher or lower, for something like I don't know, for an 800 point front flip?
800 point front flip is probably in the right place. But you look at sevens, you look at all the tricks that nobody does anymore.
Yeah, like a
And
seven front to front, like Corey Pekos could pull one of those out of his rear end at any given moment. But do you see a seven front to front? No, of course you don't.
It's too difficult. So, the flip, when flip first became a trick, right? I mean, back in the it was the 80s or early 90s when people were just doing one flip,
Which
500
was
point trick was a
that
huge deal.
actually there were 1,000 points apiece back in those days. Yeah, I
No,
think it was close to, but I think it was certainly more than 500 points. I know that.
I had flip in my run in whatever. But the point is, it was this huge trick, and now people learn flip before they learn fives,
Yeah.
right? Fives are considered more difficult than some of the basic flips. Well, so everybody is structured the way they learn tricks around the trick points. Like, well, I'm going to go learn flips because that's where all the points are. But are they really structuring trick points around what is hardest? And I mean, I know nobody's ever gonna do line tricks again, but I mean, there's a double step, wake line, five line back. Start out facing the boat. You do wake line back, turn front, and then get your leg over the line one more time before you turn backwards. And it's under 500 points. Right, how is that? I spent like two whole seasons trying to learn it, never did it. How is that harder than backflip? I mean, how is that not harder than backflip?
I mean,
So, and you go, and same with the ski lines, right? So the ski lines are all, I mean, really, you could, if you ask the best trickers in the world to order the tricks hardest to easiest, I don't think it matches the points. That's my bottom line.
and I mean, like several years ago, they actually skiers like such as Patrice Martin and Jeff Carrington were doing ski lines with the foot out of the ski, the back foot out of the ski, that the classic line step. Do you reckon they should be brought back?
I'm not against it, but you know who did that the best is Carl.
Oh yeah, I mean he was a tall drink of water, so he had to get some elevation to make that trick happen.
He did that so good. And that's insanely hard. I again tried that a lot, never did make it. Yeah, no, I don't know that we need to bring more tricks back in. I mean, I think those tricks were fun, but I think the sport has gotten stale because it's the argument of do we have six flips or like collegiate, it's unlimited flips, and these flips are hard. But again, when I go to a tournament and I see somebody do slide side reverse flip reverse flip, I'm like, seriously, come on. And no toe tricks, right? I mean, tell me a toe step five, and I don't know what a toe step five is worth, but I'm sure that difficulty wise, it's not proportional to flip half twist.
Yeah, and I mean it's just crazy pants. I mean today the flip centricness of tournament water ski tricks. You know, I mean it's putting all of that value to the invert, and hasn't addressed the point values for some of the tricks that actually takes some genuine skill to actually
Well,
pull off.
no. But yeah, but look, flips are hard. I'm not diminishing them. I'm just saying that it's improportional. And there was a time when people thought if we filled trick rides with flips, trick skiing will be more entertaining to watch. More people will watch trick skiing. And I get that idea, but I still think if you know nothing about trick skiing, by the time you've watched your fourth open level skier, unless you're a fan of the sport, it's like taking somebody to a Formula One race when they don't know who any of the drivers are. They watch the cars go around fast and they're like, I don't know what the hell's going on. So all those flips did not make watching the event more interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually kind I didn't know what to make of the tricks events in the World Championships this year. It was more of attrition based trick skiing, you know, because a lot of the skiers actually fell a good halfway through the runs, and the last guy standing happened to be Dorian Llewellyn. I mean, hate to say it at this point, but wasn't exactly the classic men's trick in final that I was rubbing my hands and looking forward to, so to speak.
Yeah, women's tricks was pretty interesting, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it always is, you know, when you've got Anna Gay and Erica and Neely and Janina Bonneman. I mean, well, Janina Bonneman this year, not so much because she'd taken that horrendous jump crash in training before the Worlds. But, you know, it is what it was. And by the way, the toe wake line five back, wasn't it? It's 600 points, and then toe wake line five front is 700. Anyway, just to clarify the points on
that. And what's a flip half twist?
Flip half twist.
I'm not even calling it the right name, I know.
Yeah, well, I mean, they call it the half jack, I believe, or is that
whatever,
the front flip to the back? Anyway,
I don't know.
A lot of the trick skiers are trying to meld a lot of the terminology that's in wakeboarding to suit tournament skiing, but I suspect you're not a fan of that either.
Oh, it's fine. Honestly, I'm not. Being anti-wakeboard is silly, and I was that guy at one point in my life. But it's just not what we do. So, but if people want to learn the tricks on a wakeboard, do them on a trick ski, more power to them.
All right, flip half twist to the back is 750 points. I just happened to have the trick scores in front of me.
So it's roughly the same as toe wake line five.
Yeah, exactly. So you made the point, you know. No, the flip twist to the back, you know, I mean, obviously there's a lot of skill being able to land that trick effectively and go straight into the next one. That's about the same as doing a toe wake trick, you know, toe wake line five back, you know, which requires a heck of a lot more skill and is actually 50 points less.
Yeah, toe wake line five back has got to be one of the most difficult tricks in the book.
Yeah, indeed. All right, or the trick that I was referring to was the toe wake line five front, but anyway, it's 700.
Right, even more, yeah, still.
But there you go. So really, let's see if the IWWF World Tournament Council can actually address some of these points with the tricks to actually be more equitable in terms of the skill that's required to actually do those tricks, you know, so they get the genuine points that they should actually be given for the skill that's for the difficulty that is actually required to do those tricks.
Yeah, nobody cares.
Oh.
Nobody cares. I just ranted for 10 minutes about trick points. I'm guessing half your listenership just reached out, just fast forward or off.
I doubt that very much because I honestly believe that there are some great fans of the tricking event, and I sincerely believe that the tricking has made a resurgence a little bit in the last few seasons. You know, I mean, it's been exciting to watch, and the world's best trick skiers, more power to them for bringing the sport up and giving more exposure to it. In my opinion.
Yeah, I'm curious if there's been a resurgence in the amateur levels or not. I mean, I know the ski companies will tell you they make as many trick skis as they can. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe those gravitons are just like moving out of that factory up in Seattle, Washington. But there you go.
They are. I mean, the D3 and Radar and Quantum and KD and a little bit of Goodman, I think they all sell just about as many Trixies as they can make.
And Reflex as well, I believe. Did you
Reflex?
Mention? Reflex as well.
Darn it, no.
But there you
Sorry,
go.
Sorry, Reflex. Love you.
No worries. Anyway, we're gonna put a button on this. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me. It's been an absolute thrill to talk with you and basically shoot the breeze with tournament water skiing. I'd love to have you back sometime during the course of the season, because I'm sure there's going to be a lot to talk about halfway into 2022. But I normally give the opportunity for the interviewee to thank people or give acknowledgements and that kind of stuff. So I turn it over to you for that bit.
Well, Tony, let me just thank you. We first talked before ball spray was a thing, and you were trying to figure out some kind of media thing in water skiing, and I've kind of watched you evolve and then the water ski broadcast company become a thing and then a bigger thing. And At this point, I think you guys are the most important media outlet in the sport. I mean, I don't put myself in the same. I do something different. I think what you guys are doing is invaluable. You guys are setting the standard. I've seen you guys grow and improve and grow and improve. And I don't know if I more want to thank you or congratulate you on the success. I look forward to years and years and years of Waterski broadcast, and it drives my wife nuts because I definitely, during ski season, I carve out weekends and it's like, well, I got to sit in front of the TV and watch the tournament all day. So thank you and the rest of the guys at Waterski Broadcast.
Well, I mean, in that respect, I think she should be thankful for Zero Off because that's dubbed the marriage saver, isn't it?
Yeah, I still can't get my wife to drive the boat.
Oh, never mind. Oh, all right then. That was John Horton. I'm Tony Lightfoot. This has been the latest edition of the TWBC podcast. So until next time, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.